I was unusually attracted to horror movies as a kid growing up in the San Fernando Valley of the 1970s, when they spoke to me in a way nothing else seemed to. I might have known one or two believers who loved them as well, but for the majority of my friends in that movie-mad decade, horror was just another genre, no more meaningful to them than the teen sex comedy or the disco musical. But what was it about horror movies and horror novels and comic books that caught my attention more than anything else? On its surface, the house I grew up in was just another modest upper-middle-class home along the edges of the hills in Sherman Oaks, but below that surface was a hugely dysfunctional gray zone. I grasped that dysfunction at a very early age and checked out, realizing I was alone. As a 1970s kid, there were no helicopter parents. You navigated the world more or less on your own, an exploration unaided by parental authority. In retrospect, my parents, like the parents of the friends I grew up with, seemed incredibly nonchalant about us. Not at all like parents today, who document their children's every move on Facebook and pose them on Instagram and urge them into safe spaces and demand only positivity while apparently trying to shelter them from everything. If you came of age in the 1970s, this was most definitely not your childhood. The world wasn't about kids yet. I remember long stretches when I might not have even seen my father, apart from the occasional weekday breakfast or dinner on Sunday, as from Monday to Friday he would have left for his job at a downtown real estate firm before my sisters and I were awake, and wouldn't return to the house in Sherman Oaks until we had finished dinner and were contemplating homework in front of the TV sets in our separate bedrooms. At 5 and 6 and 7 years old, we walked to elementary school by ourselves. Parents are now arrested for allowing this. And we played physical games about wars and monsters and espionage throughout the neighborhood streets and up into the canyons that bisected the hills of Sherman Oaks and Studio City and Encino. We would walk home from school alone, grab something to eat in an empty kitchen, and then bike a few streets over to someone else's house, where it also seemed only kids were living. If we happened to glimpse or actually say hi to somebody's mom, any conversation would be brief, and we were always eager to move on, to be on our own again, to find out about the world by ourselves, away from our practically non-existent parents. We always seemed to be active, in motion, whether in playgrounds and parks, or splashing in a friend's pool, or on the beach wading into the Pacific, or just hanging out at the pinball and video arcade in Westwood Village, while Blue Oyster Cult and ELO played as a distant soundtrack over everything. Television consisted of only a few dozen shows that aired nightly on 3 networks between 8 and 11, and from 7 until noon on Saturday mornings, and that was it. Compared to today's choices, ours were remarkably sparse, so most of the time we were on suburban streets and in arcades and malls and the beach and at Saturday double and triple matinees on our own, acting out grown-up scenarios by ourselves, feeling our way toward the sexual maturity of adolescence. On a rare weekday afternoon, I might stay inside and lounge on the green shag carpet in the living room or on the waterbed we had briefly in the house on Valley Vista if I was caught up in a comic book or novel I couldn't tear myself away from. At that age, I could read a novel in a day, concentrating on nothing else. This was how I absorbed everything from Harriet the Spy to the Little House books. But usually I read after dark, deep into the middle of the night, and this was how I first experienced Carrie, the novels of James Herbert, and the Warren comics I'd become obsessed with during those years, Eerie, Creepy, Vampirella. As a child left to his own devices, all of these horror novels, like the movies I also consumed, confirmed something for me. I was a child of the 70s who read Thomas Tryon's popular horror novel, The Other, when I was 7 years old, balancing the hardcover my mother had checked out of the Sherman Oaks Public Library on my lap while I waited for another swimming lesson on Ventura Boulevard. The pitchfork death of one of the boys at the end of the first part of that novel stunned me, became infamous for me, because it was the only detailed murder I had come across in print, and it has haunted me ever since. I wanted to know on a technical level how the author had pulled this scene off, so I read it over and over again, gazing at the paragraphs, enrapt, figuring out how the author linked the words up to give this scene its charge. The books I read and the movies I watched insisted that the world was a random and cruel place, that danger and death were everywhere, that adults could help you only so much, that there was another world, a secret one beneath the fantasy and fake safety of everyday life. Horror movies and horror fiction helped me grasp all of this at an early age. By the time I read Stephen King's Night Shift, his first collection of stories in 1978, having already read Carrie, Salem's Lot, and The Shining numerous times, Few illusions about the supposed neutral innocence of my childhood or anybody else's remained.